Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle ready-to-drink coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
Is what was Hunter Biden doing to earn access to this money? Republicans on the House Oversight Committee say the new records detail a pay-to-play scheme, proof of $20 million sent to the Bidens from foreign business sources. Now, the committee says Russian, Ukrainian, and Kazakh oligarchs funneled money to companies tied to Hunter Biden. A Russian billionaire sent $3.5 million to a shell company associated with Hunter Biden business partner Devin Archer. Then Vice President Biden dined with the billionaire in Washington. Another example has Ukrainian money going to Archer and Hunter Biden. Later, Burisma put Hunter Biden on the board.
Well,
the process involved a foreign country or foreign national wiring money to a fake company. Then the fake company would then turn around and wire the money to the Biden family members. They did this to hide the source of the revenue because they weren't supposed to get money from many of these countries.
Well, look at that. What did I wonder what he did to earn that money? I wonder what he didn't do to earn that money. That's the bigger question. All right, so welcome. Hi guys. Nothing to see here. Just, you know, some Biden stuff. It's no big. No big. Dana Loesch here. Top of this first hour on Wednesday. It's hump day. The week is going by entirely too fast, by the way. So it's good to be with you. And you can listen to the radio program coast to coast, and you can also watch the simulcast of the program. You can see the Bam Bam bun that I have on top of my head today. You can do that by YouTube, accessing YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. The Bam Bam bun's worth it, okay? So starting with this, the troubling transfers. This family, they were pimping themselves out. Yeah. We got sports cars. We got diamonds. We got $20 million in payments from the time that Joe Biden was VP. I got to tell you, too, I don't think it stops with him. I think the Obamas got in on this, too. Just saying. I think they got in on this, too. We'll talk about that. But this whole thing, all of this evidence, corroborates the bombshell testimony from Devin Archer. And we all knew this. I mean, I think at this point, we'd be surprised to find out that they followed any law. Really, ultimately. But the House Oversight Committee, they tied this $20 million in foreign cash to the Biden family brand. And Comer, you heard him talking about this. This is all of the little LLCs that they had. I mean, you know what, Kane, maybe all of these oligarchs, all of these, you know, business people from foreign countries, they're just generous. That's probably what it is, right? Probably. They're just generous. I mean, Kane, is it that you get diamonds, right? People just hand you diamonds at work and sports cars.
No.
Wait, what?
Not at all.
Actually. Hell, come to think of it, nobody's done that with me either. Yeah. Wait a second here. Wait, is that private citizen privilege that they enjoy?
There it is.
$20 million in payments to Biden Inc. And they've correlated those transactions. Interesting. All to the family members, including Joe Biden himself. So $20 million in payments. And you heard some of the reports earlier that we played just coming into the program from these foreign sources. And Devin Archer and Hunter Biden used that Rosemont Seneca. That's the big entity that they used to bring in millions from all of these oligarchs. They had a Russian oligarch that sent almost $4 million to a shell company that they had. They had another million transferred to Devin Archer. Then they had, in 2014, a Ukrainian oligarch. That was the one who placed Devin Archer and Hunter Biden on the Burisma board. They each got $1 million a year. 2014, they had a Kazakhstani oligarch who, interestingly, now I'm sure this is just a giant coincidence. Because, see, Hunter Biden had purchased a sports car, right? The sports car that Hunter Biden purchased was approximately $142,300. Now, this, interestingly enough, this Kazakhstani oligarch wired, I'm sure, again, it's a coincidence, $142,300 to Rosemont Seneca. That's the exact payment, an amount that had been transferred. That's very interesting. Just how interesting is that? Because that's coincidentally how much a sports car cost. What a small world. Now, this is just the $20 million is what we know about. They were merching out the VP's office. They were using the VP's office and selling influence. And that's how they were making their money. That is exactly it. But, you know, don't you dare think about denying the IRS its fair share if you sell something on eBay or if you're on Etsy. How dare you? Don't you even think about it. I mean, that's where we're at. So we're going to explore this more because that's just what we know. I mean, there's more. There's a lot more that's coming. In addition, the White House cocaine may probably, definitely, maybe most likely belong to someone in the Biden family orbit.
Oh, the orbit.
Yeah, it's probably Bitey, the Secret Service mauling dog, right? It's probably his cocaine dog. In fact, the report, which is now being widely cited, this is in New York Post, this is everywhere, the bag of cocaine in the West Wing. Yes, the president allegedly knows who it is. And apparently, the culprit, they are saying that it is in the Biden family orbit. And in fact, it was in a report published Sunday at Soldier of Fortune. Susan Keating made the claim. One source told her, if you want the name, ask Joe Biden. He knows who it is. Huh. Interesting. So this, just, you know, curious. Of course, you mean to tell me that it might be someone in the Biden family? I mean, they have two admitted cocaine addicts in the White House, Ashley Biden and Hunter Biden, the cocaine kids. It's Joe Biden's kids, the cocaine kids. And it might be in the Biden family orbit. Yes. Yeah. I mean, they can use cameras and they can find out the most blurriest faces that were at the Capitol on January 6th. But, you know, we just don't know who this giant bag of cocaine belongs to. We don't know who the hell comes in here. What? We don't know. Maybe if they said it was a J6 protester's cocaine, then they'd immediately find it. Yeah. I heard the person who brought the cocaine in was there a J6. That's what I heard. Speaking of which, because we have this and more, I'm going to pull my story up here. So the J6 committee, apparently they weren't turning over all the records required to the House, which is totally not legal, by the way. The Democrat-controlled January 6th committee is being accused of destroying evidence that may have actually exonerated protesters, as well as evidence that actually implicated the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, and the FBI and DOJ, all engaged in criminal activity. They failed to preserve records, even though it was required by law. They're being accused of it, but the fact is they failed to preserve records. So we're just observing that they broke the law. And remember, they were collecting video and depositions, all of this while doing this, whatever they wanted to call it. It's not an inquiry. It wasn't wasn't an investigation. And this whole thing, they were supposed to turn all of this over to the House committee. And the House committee didn't get all of this stuff. In fact, they said they just got a whole hot mess of some computer records and some files and It was just, they said, they had to sort through it. And then when they were sorting through this disorganized hot mess, that's when they discovered, interesting, like half of the records are missing. Half of the records are missing. Now, there's a law that requires the preservation of such records. And so also the committee itself established rules to adhere to said law to preserve records. And especially if they contain any kind of exculpatory evidence, meaning something exonerating someone. And apparently, when the J6 people, the defendants, were demanding some of this stuff for their own defense, they weren't provided. How is this due process? How in the world is this due process? That's a million-dollar question. It's not. If you're withholding exculpatory evidence and you're going ahead with this kangaroo court, that's not a trial. That's theater. That's not a trial at all. And let me tell you, there's a stark difference between how Republicans are already handling this and how Democrats are handling it. And I wrote about some of this last night. If you get the email newsletter, I wrote about some of this because there are some people, and we're going to talk more about it in depth, but there are some people out there that are angry because they said, oh, all right, we got all this. What are you going to do about it? They want an impeachment. They want all this stuff right now. And I get it. I completely get it. And I wrote about this in the context of that process because Republicans, I think they have to be very careful in this situation. They're in a tough spot because they don't want to repeat the Democrats' rush into impeachment and or any kind of conviction of people with zero criminal charges and no inquiry. Because yes, the GOP base, we all believe that. I mean, looks like there's some legitimate suspicions, not just on the Bidens, but also, I mean, we're just talking about the committee here. People and I think in general are so tired of the DC intrigue and the use of government as a political weapon. And I think they're tired of all of it. And while, you know, all of us, you know, we totally welcome a justified inquiry and some, you know, based on these pretty damn legitimate suspicions of the Bidens and their influence peddling and skirting of the law when it comes to reporting the foreign cash that they're getting in to just peddle away America's national security. If the GOP base was enough to win elections, then we wouldn't need to convince anybody else. You would need to convince the moderates and the independents. But it's those people who you got to win over. And you're not going to do that by just rushing headlong into something. Now, I'm not saying that there's, in fact, I totally believe that these people are guilty. But you have to look, not just actually care about the rule of law, but you got to look like the people that care about the rule of law. I'm going to explain why this is so important, and we're going to contrast this further here as we get going. We got headlines coming up, a lot of stuff to hit today. As students begin heading back to school, do you think they'll be learning about the founding principles that made America the freest and most prosperous nation in history? Will they learn that our unalienable rights are God-given and not granted by government? Will they be given a full and honest account of our nation's history? The answer to all of these questions is yes for students at Hillsdale College. In addition to teaching college students, Hillsdale has extended its teaching to K-12 students and lifelong learners like you. If you're not doing so already, one of the best ways to start learning from the folks at Hillsdale is through Imprimis, Hillsdale's free digest of liberty. You can sign up for free at this special website for a limited time at dana4hillsdale.com. And you can look forward to Imprimis each month. It's interesting, useful, and free, and it's one of the best and smartest in conservative constitutionalist thought. Find out more about Hillsdale College and sign up for Imprimis at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com.
With crime and drug addiction continuing to skyrocket, the U.S. has the highest rate of single-parent households in the world. LBJ's Great Society resulted in a reliance on social welfare programs and destruction in the family unit. Is there a direct correlation? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
This is a wild story. If you get the email newsletter, then you got this already. The cousin, everyone remembers the tragedy in Uvalde. The cousin of that killer was arrested for threatening to shoot up a school. The cousin of the killer responsible for the deadly school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, was arrested Monday after his mother reported that he was trying to buy a gun and do the same thing, according to authorities. The 17-year-old was taken into custody Monday morning, charged with making threats to a public place and his own family. One was a felony charge, one was a misdemeanor. The mother notified authorities after learning that her son had made statements that worried her. And she said that he literally said he was going to shoot up the school. And the other weird thing about this, according to the police affidavit and some other reporting, including that of New York Times, the mother apparently overheard a phone conversation that the suspect made that morning in which the suspect attempted to acquire an AR-15 through an illegal private sale. So no other information has been given about that, but it's incredibly interesting. It was a nice run, humans. Nice run. So apparently now Fancy Feast, the cat food, is trying. They're making Fancy Feast for humans. They did a pop-up shop because people are so desperate to be bougie that they decided to do human cat food at Madison Square Park. This is why aliens don't visit us. Those people should be sterilized, those people. That's ridiculous. Drinking just one can of sugary soda a day may raise the risk of liver cancer by 85%. Harvard team observed nearly 100,000 American women for over 20 years, and they compared their drinking habits to rates of liver cancer cases and liver disease. And they found out that if you're drinking sugary soda, and I'm not talking like the diet stuff, I'm talking about the regular soda, that like Mountain Dew has the most sugar of all the drinks out there. Brisk lemon tea, which is not really a soda, but it has the least. But they said that everything was pretty much well over the daily recommended. Like Fanta's really high up there. Bark's root beer's really high up there. That crushed grape drink, really high up there. So, I think we probably told you that. But eating nuts, this is weird, can actually ward off depression, according to a study. Eating 30 grams of nuts every day, they say it's linked to a 17% lower risk of depression. And 30 grams a daily of nuts is enough to reap anti-inflammatory benefits. They studied 13,500 people in the UK aged 37 to 73, and they did not have depression at the start of the study, and they literally studied nut consumption. That's very interesting. I like almonds. It tastes good. Let's see. This fast food restaurant sparked outrage with the Anne Frank burger and Hitler fries. Why would anyone do this? It was in Argentina. Oh, they offer the Adolf burger and the Anna Frank hamburger. Why? The place is called Honky Donkey. A local eatery, and it's in the Santa Fe province, and so a lot of people were very upset about that, clearly. So I think they're taking it off of their menu. Kind of wild. Oh, and then I've skipped over this one. Three were charged with assault over that wild Mick Foley style attack on the Alabama dock. I mean, that's still coming out. By the way, the guy who went through the Crocs, that was from a Brooklyn fight. That wasn't from Alabama. So I was really upset to find that fact check out. Stick with us. We got a lot more in store next. Caltech invented the concealed carry category years ago with the P11, but did they stop there? Heck no. One innovation just led to another and another, and well, just look at their latest, the P15. It's the lightest, thinnest, double-stack 9mm handgun on the market at only 14 ounces and 7/8 inches wide. The P15 has a 4-inch barrel and double-stack magazine that holds 15+1 total capacity. Its gator grip texture on the polymer version increases stability and makes for ambidextrous grip safety and easy, accurate handling. If you prefer a more vintage look, choose the metal version with classic wood panels and textured grips. The P15 has a Tritium Plus fiber optic front sight with a fully adjustable Tritium 2-dot rear to keep you on target in any situation. Make the P15 your choice for concealed carry. Learn more at KeltechWeapons.com. Sign up for the Keltec Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories at KeltechWeapons.com. That's KeltecWeapons.com.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Are you prepared to declare a national emergency with respect to climate change?
I've already done that. National emergency, we've conserved more land. We've moved into, we've rejoined the Paris Climate Accord. We've passed a $368 billion climate control facility. We're moving. It is the existential threat to humanity.
So you've already declared that national emergency?
Well, in the practice, you have a bug on.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate it. So you've already declared that national emergency?
Practically speaking, yes.
Yeah.
The hell does that mean, practically speaking, I did? You know, I mean, I did, you know, it's practically I did. I don't even understand what that means. Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch here with you, bottom of this first hour. He did a super hard-hitting interview with the Chex Notes Weather Channel. The Weather Channel, everybody.
Journalism.
Yeah. Flicks a bug right off her shirt as he defends the, I don't know what he's defending, the climate record. What's the climate record that he's talking about? I'm not quite sure. He apparently, did he spend 45 minutes looking at the Grand Canyon yesterday? Because he had like a whole thing, 45 minutes blocked out on his schedule for that. Just, you know, kind of wondering about that. So, Yeah, it was, he had some humdingers here, like this, audio soundbite 2. Oh, please inject this. This is great.
The Grand Canyon, one of the Earth's 9 wonders, wonders of the world. Literally. Think of that. Or, you know, it's amazing.
It's amazing. Just amazing, you know. One of the 9th wonders of the world. I mean, literally, I think this is like one of his worst. Dare I play audio soundbite 4? Because he's traveling around the country trying to sell his climate stuff. Dare I play soundbite 4? Because he was asked about illegal immigration. Do it, because this is nuts. Like, I mean, every one of these soundbites is nuts. This is, audio soundbite 4.
Is it the responsibility of the U.S. to protect migrants who might be fleeing extreme weather in their countries?
Look, I think the United States should do everything it can to help people who are in desperate need and have no other means of help. And we've always done that. It is not our, it is just who we are. We're the United States of America. And the idea to begrudge the ability to do, for example, one of the things we're doing is we're providing for changing the environment, the physical structures in the countries which they come from. So they have better lighting. They have more secure, for example, you have so many lead pipes all across America and throughout the country. You have 440,000 schools, you turn on the water fountain and you may have lead in the water. And thousands of people, we're replacing every single lead pipe in America.
Yeah, we're replacing every single lead pipe in America. That answers your question about the weather and illegal immigration. I mean, about that? Really? Good heavens. Yeah, that. I don't think he's going to be selling this. He's going to have to sell it in, he's looking at the younger generation. Because this, I think that people who can do math aren't going to buy it. I don't even know if that's going to do it. Good grief. All right. So a few things I want to hit because I wrote about this and pulling this up. I hope that you do get the email newsletter and you sign up, you're a subscriber for it. Because there's a lot of good stuff that comes out about this that I put out throughout the week. So I was talking about, I noticed this headline. This was on the heels of last week and his little health issue last week. But Mitch McConnell, he went out and he had a soundbite where he was saying that impeachment ought to be rare and is not good for the country. Now, he was not saying, and I'm not saying this as a McConnell fan, but I think that there's a strategy in play here. And I wanted to talk about that because McConnell isn't saying that he doesn't believe it's warranted. I think his comment was more so directed towards Democrats, but there are people who just hate Mitch McConnell enough that they think they want to internalize everything. Because he's right. It's not good for the country if you're using it as a weapon like Democrats did. It's not Republicans that are dragging this towards any kind of impeachment or legal inquiry. It's Democrats who by their actions are doing so. And so I wrote about this last night that I think Republicans need to let McConnell play this card because the country's tired of impeachment talk and they're tired of, you know, the DC intrigue, like I was saying earlier. And I also think that while the base welcomes a completely legitimate, based upon the facts, into this very well-documented and pretty damn legitimate suspicions on the Biden influence trading, I think they you need to be seen going through the proper protocol, adhering to the rule of law. Because if the GOP base was enough to win elections, then we wouldn't have to convince anybody else. It wouldn't matter. To hell what you moderates think, right? We wouldn't care. But it's the moderates and independents who need winning over. The people who are not tuned in every single day like you all are who need winning over. And you're not going to win them over by repeating Democrats, their bizarro rush headfirst into an impeachment process with literally zero criminal charges and not even an investigation. So Republicans can't just look like the party that cares about rule of law. They have to legitimately care for rule of law. And to that extent, the Republic. And they have to contrast their careful adherence to the law with the reckless disregard shown to it by Democrats. Now, I've said this before, but I wanted to, it reminded me again of that John Adams defense of British soldiers who were involved in the Boston Massacre. Because Adams was, I think he was like 35. He was grieving the loss of a child. He had another baby on the way. He was very well known to support the Patriot cause as active. And on March 5th, 1970, that's when there was an argument at a pub, and it was sort of carried out into the streets. And then there were a group of rope makers, and among them, Crispus Attucks, who was, you know, an American hero. He was the first fatality in the American War for Independence. And he was kind of at the head of the group. And there was this sentry outside of the Boston Commons House, or Customs House. And that's where, you know, the business of the day was kind of carried out by the Brits. And they were kind of going at the sentry. And then as other redcoats joined the sentry, the crowd grew in numbers and in fury. And then it all went sideways and shots were fired and five people were killed. Now, the British captain, Thomas Preston, he was mad that his redcoats had fired. But during the trial, they were actually arguing self-defense. I think this is one of the first self-defense cases. Proto-American self-defense cases. And they said that they believed that their lives were in danger and they acted to defend themselves. Now, Adams was a staunch supporter of the Patriot cause to the point where he knew that America could not be a republic, would not be seen as a legitimate republic, particularly like the founders had envisioned, if the burgeoning country could not even pass the first test, which was due process. I mean, the dream of self-governance would have been forever ruined if the Patriots could not prosecute impartial trials. And it was for this reason that he accepted the case. One of the founding fathers defended the Redcoats in trial. And he focused, laser focused, on facts alone. And he did not involve the Patriot cause. He did not indict the Sons of Liberty, didn't do anything like that. And the verdict, he was incredibly successful. The verdict resulted in the acquittal of six soldiers and two manslaughter convictions for the remaining two redcoats. Now, here's the thing. The colonists, even though all of this was controversial, the colonists accepted the verdicts. Because John Adams did this in the face of his cousin, Sam Adams. You had Sam Adams and John Adams. Sam Adams was a fiery speaker. He was a hellraiser in the streets. He was the one who was leading, along with Paul Revere, the Committees of Correspondence, Sons of Liberty, all this. They were the ones leading the charge on this. And they amassed a protest outside the courthouse on the first day of the trial. So they were really leading the narrative on that. He was a messaging genius. And then you had John Adams, who was not a charismatic guy. And he was a legal scholar, very smart, not in any way as outgoing and out there as his cousin was. And so, in the face of all of this, these colonists widely accepted these verdicts. There was no riots after. There were no protests after. And I think that really speaks volumes to how Adams handled it and how he was focusing so much on the importance of due process. He actually remarked many years later that his defense was one of the most gallant, he says, quote, one of the most gallant, generous, manly, and disinterested actions of my whole life, and one of the best pieces of service I ever rendered my country. Here's the thing. You need both the Sam Adams and the John Adams. Good cop and bad cop in a way. You need the skillful legal maneuvers and quiet operations of John Adams. And you need the fiery orations and the messaging machinations of Sam Adams. You have to have both. because a movement moves best with a balance between the two. Now, having said this, I think it would be dumb for people to sit here and infer from this that I'm comparing McConnell to Adams, because I'm not. I'm looking at the approach specifically, because comparison of an approach is not comparison of a case, especially when it's so damn clear cut like the Biden scandals. I think McConnell and others, they have to demonstrate this adherence to the inquiry process, because Americans must see, we have to see how our republic is supposed to function. I mean, we have gone so long without seeing it. We need to see it function like that again. An inquiry as it's supposed to proceed, with actual criminal charges brought about by evidence, as opposed to this, like, you know, Pyrrhic victory of an optic at the expense of what? Faith in government? Like that kind of inquiry and the results bought from that, that's a lasting one. And so that's what I'm looking at here, because he's very careful in how he moves. And when he remarks on something, that's usually, it's kind of like how Johnny Carson wouldn't weigh in on anything. And when he did, that was considered the end of it. Oh, Johnny Carson weighed in. So that's, you know, that's a prevailing thought. He's very similar in terms of strategy. And I think that I think that you have to have both of those approaches. And I think he's providing one approach. And you have to have the people who are real fiery about it. You have to have those two. You need both. You have to have one to encourage and one to temper. So I think that Republicans need to let him play this card. So that's why I'm not like going out there and getting all, because this is the guy also, I see some of the other stuff that he does. He shepherds some of this stuff in there that, you know, Democrats definitely wouldn't like. And I have no doubt that he would expertly really prosecute any kind of trial should the GOP win the Senate in 2024 and something like this is brought about. So I'm just saying, I think they need to let him play this card. Every day we hear about another familiar brand undermining their customers and going, quote, woke. Americans are sick and tired of having far-left propaganda jammed into every product they consume. And for years, they've dumped millions into far-left causes, and everybody had to kind of take it because you needed a cell phone and probably thought that there was no alternative. Well, there is, and that's Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offering dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to in your area, minus the far-left propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending a message that you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, our military, veterans, and first responders. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today using offer code Dana and ask about their coverage guarantee while you're there. Get the same dependable service and take a stand for your values. Make the switch today. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Patriot.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
My son does identify as a cat, but I cannot take him to a vet because I tried that, and the veterinarian told me that because he has human anatomy, that he does not know how to work on him or diagnose him with anything. And he legally cannot. So, and while I do think that is a form of discrimination, because, you know, my son, if he says he's a cat, he is a cat. And he needs to be treated like that, like one, you know? But I'm not going to press charges because I know that he could lose his license if he did work on my son. So
okay, so the internet's saying that this is a parody account.
Is it though?
I don't know. Because everything is so nuts that I can't tell anymore.
It's hard to tell.
I mean, I have to literally go, is this person for real on social media? And then, and they're not exactly sure. They're like, we think it's parody. I mean, I think it may be.
I'm hoping that it is.
But they're like, yes, it's real. Can you believe it? And someone's like, no, because there really was a parent. And then they linked a story of a parent who got mad because the school didn't treat their kid like a dog that they were trying to pretend to be. So I don't know. And then we have, you know, the dude who literally spent $15,000 on a crappy collie costume and has to be like hauled around on one of those like Home Depot, Lowe's, whatever, plant beds because he can't actually walk on all fours because, you know, he's not a damn dog. I just, why are we entertaining this stuff? You know what? I'm so tired of people. Like, it's so rude if you're not affirming someone's neurosis. It's rude if you expect us to affirm your neurosis. We are pressed upon people, you know? Like, we've got a lot of stuff going on in our day. We got kids going back to school. We got school supplies to get ready. We got dinner to make. We got to figure out how we're, you know, going to get all our laundry done. The last thing that we need is to have to be bitched at by somebody because how dare we not affirm their decision to either pretend that they're an animal or pretend that because they cut their nuts off, they're a chick. I'm tired of it. We are busy people. Leave us alone. Leave us alone. Really, that's what we need. We need that guy crying for us. Tired of this. Golly. Every day. I mean, at some point, it's rude, isn't it? It's rude. Like, treat me like the billionaire I am, and I'm going to go into a bank and be like, I want my $1 billion because I identify as that. So go ahead and give it to me. Make it real. See, that's the thing. They know it's not real, but in order for it to be real for them, you have to affirm it. In order for it to be fully real for them, they have to force you into doing all of it. It's not really real if you're not doing it. That's not my problem. Gosh. I had a horrible, like, watery breakfast yogurt this morning. And that's my problem right now. I'm still mad about it. It was the worst yogurt I've ever had. And I'm like, what is with this yogurt? It's nasty. Like, what is wrong? I just want some Greek yogurt and just put some granola in it. What's wrong? And that's my problem. And if I had to deal with somebody coming up to me being like, I need you to pretend that I'm a dog, I'd kick you. Get away. Done with it. This people stress me out. Stop. All right. This is what we got coming up. all the latest with everything going on in D.C., obviously. And then in Oregon, this is just, I find this is a trip. So they have finally approved self-serve gas stations, right? You've never been able to pump your gas before in Oregon. Now you can. They've actually had to make video tutorials on social media because they were all pumping gas, apparently, like Mike Pence, which we're also going to talk about. I don't know if Mike Pence knows how to pump gas. Is he from Oregon? Hell, I don't know. We're going to talk about it because that's what he did in his new ad. Stay with us. Welcome to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash, here with you. Top of the second hour. You can listen coast to coast. You can watch the simulcast also on YouTube, Facebook, channel 347, DirecTV. All right. So we were talking a little bit earlier about how people in Oregon, they get to pump their gas for the first time, right? And they didn't know how to do it. And I guess the government, like in New Jersey, Steve was telling us that in New Jersey, they don't let you pump your gas. I guess they think that you're just going to get the gas nozzle out and just, how do I do it? And just get gas everywhere and then burn the whole damn gas station. I don't know. What do they think? They think you can't, that you're stupid and you can't do anything without it. But I just wonder, does Mike Pence live in one of those two? I know he's from Indiana, but did he ever live in one of those two states for a long period of time? Because I always wait for the campaign ad that comes out of a campaign season to drop. And I never expected to have it this early. Never. I mean, you guys know what I'm talking about. Every single time, every election cycle, whether it's a general or midterm, there's a campaign ad that comes up that I get obsessed with. And there's the one guy where he's a hay bale. Where's the other guy? Where's some of the other ones? Guy with hay in his
truck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A dog.
A guy who didn't even know how to, like, shoulder a gun. It was amazing. This Democrat that, I mean, there's always an ad that comes out that I get obsessed with. And I can't get enough of it. It's so damn funny. And so, case in point. So, Mike Pence dropped an ad. He dropped an ad yesterday. And, you know, he's just regular guy Mike Pence. If you get the email newsletter over at Substack, I did write about it. Because he decided, you know, and I think it was, I'll say this. Look, I'm going to say something nice. He was timing his ad to coincide with the week that Joe Biden is going to go and try to sell his energy or lack thereof. Talk about how he's going to ruin all oil and gas and everybody's just going to basically be, you know, just be on Chinese solar. I get it. So he decided he's going to do this ad at a gas station. Now, I'm immediately thinking, okay, because he seems a little stiff. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that to be mean. Just not everybody can get in front of the camera and do all that stuff. And that shouldn't actually be a requirement for office. But his dude is stiff. So that's why I was wondering. I'm like, has he ever? Because he gets gas in his ad. And it's like AI wrote the damn thing. So he drops his ad. He gets out of a truck. Let me set it up and we're going to play it. He sticks a gas pump nozzle into the open gas tank while the machine pleadingly beeps at him to please choose a fuel type throughout the entire ad. And he doesn't swipe a credit. I mean, maybe he gets free gas. I don't know. I just listen to some of this. Because is he holding the lever in the pump? I don't even know. Just listen to some of this ad first.
Hey, everybody. Mike Pence here. Remember $2 a gallon gas? I do. And then Joe Biden became president of the United States and launched his war on energy. Since that time, gasoline prices are up 60%. Electricity prices are up 25%. Joe Biden's war on energy is causing real hardship for working families, small businesses, and family farms. But we've got a plan to relieve all of that. We just unveiled the Pence Energy Plan that will not only put our country back on a path to energy independence.
Now, what the things that he's saying, this is what my first thought when I saw this ad. Go ahead and hit wham. That's my first thought. The Zoolander scene when they're all at the gas station and they're just having a gas fight. Okay, that was my first thought, right? So he gets out and the machine is beep, beep, beep. He's got this lapel mic on. If you're trying to be the everyman, first off, you should have had a boom mic. You should not have had a lapel mic. The audio is horrible. I don't know who shot this thing. Is that his truck? Or did he wait for somebody to go inside and get a Mega Millions and then he went out and did it? I don't know. But, I mean, it's like I said, it's like AI wrote it. Hello, I'm normal human Mike Pence. I want to give all your gases to Ukraine. Here, let's feed this truck some Saudi juice. Beep, beep, beep. Joe Biden is made of Ensure and orthopedic soles of senior sneakers. He made your energy prices go up while his son snorted Chinese Coke. I hate Trump. Vote for me. Beep, beep, beep. That was the ad. It was like, that was, and I know he's like saying things about energy and gas prices and all of this stuff. No one's paying attention because we're all asking questions like, do you just get free gas? Or do you not know how to pump gas? Like, who gets out of their truck and the gas cap's already open? And all that stuff for him. He gets out with his lapel mic on. And then the thing that's beeping, you got to choose like what grade of gas you're going to get. And you have to also choose, you know, you swipe your card. You know, gone are the days of paying after. You got to prepay. You got to swipe your card, right? And it was just weird. And then he just like, was he holding the lever? I don't know. Would it have taken an extra minute to just kick out the little kickstand that it has and just let it go? I mean, I don't know. I just feel like it could have all of these. It was just poorly directed. It was so poorly directed. I don't know. If I had to pit that up to, do you remember here? Get this. Do you remember when Elizabeth Warren, I had this post out last night. You remember her Insta Live where she was in her kitchen awkwardly, like pretending to cook or make some of her famous Native American. What did she make? Crab dip. Yes, because we all know that. Native Americans made crab dip and very fancy hors d'oeuvres, right? Remember when she was faking to be a Native American? And she did. She literally wrote it on a card in her own hand when she was applying to Harvard. But do you remember when she was like, oh, hi, sweetie. Would you like a beer? Listen to how awkward this was. The Foley effect.
Glover, my husband Bruce is now in here. You want a beer?
No, I'll pass on the beer for now.
You sure? Come on, say hello to
folks. Yes.
So, hey. This is my sweetie.
Hello.
What kind of nerd hell is that? No, I'll pass on a beer for now. No, I will pass on a beer for now. Is that just them? Are they? Is that how Northeasterners talk? I guess. Or is it just them two? I don't know. But she's in there standing in her kitchen. Oh, yeah, I'm pretending to cook and I'm going to conveniently grab this beer with the label backwards so you can't actually see what I'm drinking. Oh, hi, honey. Would you like a beer? And he's bewildered. Like, this broad's offering me a beer. How long we've been married? This broad ain't never offered me a beer a day of my life. But because she's got this Insta Live going, now she's offering me a beer. I feel like if I had to pit the Mike Pence gas thing up against the Elizabeth Warren, hi, sweetie, would you like a beer? I don't know what pander stunt would win. I don't know what would win. If it was like a cage match style. It's like my kids always come up with these like crazy scenarios. Like, okay, what would win? 50 penguins against an alligator or what would win? The Mike Pence gas ad or the Elizabeth Warren Insta-Life beer? I don't know. But see, I feel like he's, I think that he's trying to be wholesome with his ad, but I think that's how he should have started his campaign instead of coming out and being like, well, I hate Trump. I just feel like that would have worked better for him. Oh my gosh, it is like, it is so awkward. That ad is one of the most awkward ads I have ever seen in my life. And my favorite is the fuel pump, featuring fuel pump. It's like he came out with a song and that's like the guest rap. That's like the guest for the bridge. Featuring fuel pump. Beep, 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 beep. I love it. But I just want to touch on the thing in New Jersey with the gas, because they passed that in Oregon so everybody can go out and pump their gas. The self-serve. And now New Jersey, why? It's a crime? It's a $500 fine if you don't wait for an attendant to handle it for you? Right? $500. They said, oh, no, it's too dangerous to dispense the gas yourself. It's too dangerous, Kane. I mean, you could slip on a slick surface. You could accidentally just cover yourself in gas. I mean, people, they act like they're lighting their candles out there right by the gas, right by the fuel pump. I just don't understand this. It is one of the goofiest things ever. So now, under the new law, at least half of the pumps must still be reserved for full-service gas pumping. I'm going to tell you, I don't mind. Like in southern Missouri, there, I think, one time I've only ever found a gas station where it says they had an attendant. And I immediately pulled in there because I'm like, that is bougie as hell. That is like some bougie service, right? To have a gas station. That's service, right? That's like the Ritz of gas station services. It was very nice, but I don't ever see that. So I don't even know how to deal with it. I'm the opposite. I wouldn't know what to do. I'd be driving in like, what is, I don't even know what. So they said that half of them has to be full serve. I'm obsessed with this. I'm so sorry. And they don't have to offer it, but half the pumps must still be reserved for full service gas pumping. But they're not required. That doesn't make any sense. What does that mean? I don't know. And they have to charge the same price for both options, either full service or, what? You're not paying your, it's just weird. So union leaders did not like the, do they have a union? They have a gas station attendant union? I would imagine. 2,000 gas stations. They said that's millions of dollars a year that corporations are not paying in wages and payroll taxes, etc. So now New Jersey stands alone in mandating universal full-service gas pumping. They enacted that in 1949. And there is nothing to suggest that they're going to change that. So literally, if you're in New Jersey and you try to get out and pump your gas, that's a legal no-no. I think Mike Pence needs to go there and have them pump his gas. I mean, that was some crazy stuff. Good heavens. All right. So I was thinking about this, too, switching gears here and looking at the Bidens, because they came out with that story saying that they think it probably, the cocaine most likely definitely looks like it belongs to someone in the Biden family orbit. I actually think Joe Biden needs cocaine. I think he needs it, Kane. Yeah. I mean, I watched that movie Blow. They get nuts. I think he needs cocaine.
He needs some uppers.
He needs something. I mean, would that make him not almost... I was nervous about him standing near the Grand Canyon. I was like, that old man is going to fall right the hell into the Grand Canyon. I was nervous. I don't want to have to go... I don't want Kamala. I'm like, oh my gosh, get him away from the giant gorge in the earth. Get him away. He was standing right there. Did you see? I mean, the man falls down on a flat surface. He's not moving and he'll just fall down. I was very nervous about him being that close to the biggest hole in the earth. Just saying. And he's like, oh, let me get this bug out. I don't even know what he said at the end of that sentence. I think he needs some of the cocaine. I'm just, you know, just wondering.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I have three words for you. Hawk and snake. A Texas woman is viciously attacked by a snake and a hawk at the same time as she mowed her backyard. Peggy Jones was first attacked by a snake, only to then be swooped on by a hungry hawk as it tried to grab its prey. She was left with deep lacerations and bruises on her arm after this entirely bizarro chance encounter. She says she feels lucky to have survived. She had to have her arm all bandaged up. It was wild. She said that she was yelling and screaming and her husband didn't know what was going on. She said, I thought I was bitten by the snake, but apparently it was just the hawk that got her. She said the snake was squeezing her arm. She was on a tractor mower, and the snake literally fell out of the sky, landed on her at her home in Silsbee. It tightened on her arm, then the hawk swooped down and then started clawing at her because that it thought she had its food. And she, like, they broke her glasses. She had snake venom on her glasses. She said the hawk hit her face. She said she actually doesn't know that she didn't think she got bitten by the snake at all. The hawk ended up like taking it out. She had to go to the hospital. That is crazy. And that's not her first snake attack. Apparently they fall off out of trees and stuff. It's crazy though. Oh my gosh. So Cardi B, you know, when she threw that microphone at somebody who threw water at her. Okay. That sold on eBay, the mic, for almost $100,000. It sold on eBay. For almost $100,000. That is crazy. Golly. This is an insane story. The U.S. has arrested 79 people linked to a global pedophile ring. It was busted after the high-profile murders of two FBI agents in Florida in 2021. Well, now they've run them down. Aussie cops detained 19 others and they rescued 13 children. I hope they rope all of these people up and kill them in the most torturous way possible. Oh my, publicly. Kill these sickos torturously and publicly. Oh my gosh. Just, I'm so glad that 13 children were arrested, but, you know, that's 13 out of many more that still are not. Tonga's volcano. Apparently, so their undersea volcano eruption that was last year in January was larger than any nuclear blast ever conducted by the U.S., apparently. And the shockwave was felt worldwide, according to a new study which was released this week. It injected large amounts of water vapor into the stratosphere, and it could cause global temperatures to warm temporarily. A volcano. Stick with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
So the White House clearly trying to gin up excitement for President Biden's 2024 campaign.
Yes.
His CNN's poll from last week found that President Biden's approval rating is at only 41%. Mm-hmm. Only 37% of Americans approve of his handling of the economy. I said this in our staff meeting today. I feel like I've been noting this for 3 years. President Biden is out there heralding such and such, and the American people disapprove overwhelmingly. Yeah. 3 years in, we're still having this conversation.
Still having the conversation because...
So I want to cut in here. Let's cue up audio soundbite 7, because this is what I was wanting to hit. This is Biden talking about the EV push on this, because that's what he's traveling around the country to promote. Welcome back to the program, Dana Lash here. Bottom of the second hour. This is what he's traveling around the country to promote this. He was at the Grand Canyon yesterday, and we were talking about how we were nervous that he was standing there by a biggest hole in the country, and he didn't want him to fall down. This doesn't make sense. This is not a good push of this. Listen.
Labor has been always opposed to environmental changes because they think it costs them jobs. It's their future. They're going to build 550,000 electric charging stations all across America. My mom used to say, Out of everything bad, something good will come if you look hard enough for it. There's an enormous opportunity. We're growing the economy. We're, in fact, but it's not enough for us to do. We have to change the whole world's attitude. And right now, Russia and China are very, very difficult partners.
Well, they're not partners. I mean, that's like a, you know, a huge part of it. They're actually not partners of any of this. They are, I mean, ultimately, they're partners with each other, not partners with anyone else in the world. And reliance upon what he's talking about is total reliance upon Chinese materials in order to make that happen. And furthermore, there's and you're not even going to be able to extract it efficiently or inexpensively enough in order to fulfill the needs. And there's just not the capability to do so. It's wild. But he's, you know, whether or not his push for EV, he's like, oh yeah, something's going to go. It sounds like he's just, I mean, to try to brush off real legitimate concerns about what you're doing to oil and gas and all of the jobs and everything, and not to mention the reliability of that energy source compared to what he wants to move us to. I mean, how are you going to sit here and satisfy a green market when, say, there's like a blockade in the South China Sea? How are you going to be getting your materials, considering that China has the monopoly on over 90% of them? How are you going to get your materials in order to run your big green agenda? It doesn't make sense. You can be for the green agenda all you want to, but don't act like it's some sort of environmental concern that motivates you. We've talked about this before. People think that just simply because they outsource the extraction of these materials, which, by the way, are much more damaging to the environment, much more toxic, much more carcinogenic. There are stories of entire areas, entire little towns and villages, etc., where they are all afflicted with some sort of disease because of the carcinogens that come by way of extracting this stuff. And you're looking at one of the most populous nations in the world that has zero environmental regulations, zero concerns for its workforce or labor, and they just go to town on this so that they can have cheap materials and then they can corner the market on it. That's not in any way environmentally safer. It's actually worse. It's a hell of a lot worse. It's more expensive, more difficult to extract, and it's not as reliable, the end result. It just isn't. And you're pushing before the market's ready and before the marketplace is even ready to support something like this. They are trying to push before they can. They can't even walk, much less run. And they're pushing it. And so him to sit here and say, oh, you know, all these concerns with some stupid platitudes. I mean, it's asinine. And as Kane noted, too, Biden even blocked the uranium mining right there bordering the Grand Canyon. I mean, uranium used for what? Nuclear power plants, electricity, and the majority of that's imported from Russian and Russian aligned entities. So why? Why even do it? Oh, well, I mean, if you were wanting to make the United States more dependent upon geopolitical foes, that's exactly what you would do. So the administration, they've decided to move to protect nearly a million acres around the Grand Canyon. That's where those uranium deposits are. They decided to pass this to protect. They've been fighting over this for decades, the domestic uranium production, nuclear energy fight. And there is a Native American tribe, and they're trying to say that some of the environmental advocates that had joined together, and they were trying to do this. They wanted to stop any of this mining from happening near the Grand Canyon, which is, by the way, him doing this and announcing this yesterday, it's one of the reasons why he was there at the Grand Canyon, because they were going to push this out. And he wanted the optic of doing it. So he assigned that proclamation. It established the new national monument. It's the ancestral footprints, they said, of the Grand Canyon National Monument in northern Arizona. And so it includes three areas just south, northeast, and northwest of the Grand Canyon National Park. And so the park name in the Havasupai language translates to, quote, where indigenous peoples roam in English. And so they also have some language from the Hopi tribe, which also means our ancestral footprints in English. And so that's what they're. So, yep, they've had a ban since 2012 on uranium mining in the area. I guess 2012. But that expires in not like anytime soon, I think in the next decade or so. And so that area has about 1.3% of U.S. uranium reserves. And even though because they said that the designation is not going to infringe on existing mining claims that predate the 2012 ban. But that's actually being disputed because there was one company, Energy Fuels, that holds the rights to mine uranium and copper there. And, you know, it takes a long time. You have to secure the land. Then you have to do surveys on the land. You have to clear all of these bureaucratic hurdles. And then you have lots and lots of, stiff competition from foreign uranium suppliers. But you also have to deal with all of the protracted legal battles from different environmental groups and tribes and all of this other stuff. And that's... But one of the reasons why we've been trying to get our own is because we're trying to get ourselves to be less dependent on Russia. How are you going to sit here and say all this stuff about Russia when you're funding them, you're fueling them? So Joe Biden just is basically putting more money in the pocket of Russia. So I don't want to hear any of these people sit here and talk, oh, Russia this, Russia that. No, I don't care about any of it. Because you guys, apparently it's not serious enough for them to not continue facilitating this monopolistic control over uranium. And yeah, while he's trying to fund, he's not funding Ukraine. They're money laundering. And then they're giving a cut to Ukrainian leaders. Let's be real about this. So that's, I think this is, it's silly. It is absolutely silly. We are making ourselves more dependent upon geopolitical foes, which is going to, it's disastrous. I mean, how are you making it? That's making a nation more dependent upon opposition is one of the worst things that you could do to any kind of preparedness or national security. So I am, it is incredibly frustrating. Incredibly frustrating. Now, audio soundbite 5, he touches on this more in terms of extending this to the military with climate. Listen.
How is the U.S. preparing the military?
Well, we're preparing the military by trying to deal with the climate stuff. For example, many of the bases that have flooded, many of these massive floods, they've flooded out military bases in the Midwest and the South. That has a profound impact on readiness. And so what we have to do is change the way in which we generate energy. And that's the whole of it. And the military...
They've been trying to do this under since Barack Obama as well. Like, oh yes, here's our climate strategy. They wanted to slash the Army's emissions in half by 2030. They want all non-combat vehicles electrified, and then they want to develop that by 2035, and then they want to develop all electric combat vehicles. And that is wow. That's going to affect readiness for sure. And that's what it's about. I mean, they're viewing weather changes. You know, I just had the headline. Let me pull this up. I just had this headline last segment. The story of the volcano in Tonga. And how that, even though it was last year, studies now showing that the eruption of that sent water vapor in the air, and is actually, they're saying, looks like it's contributing to a warming temperature, because it's a volcano that it can spew more stuff into the atmosphere than, you know, everyone else's emissions combined. But, and they did this huge research study, and they said that the greenhouse warming effect of the 40 trillion gallons of water vapor in the stratosphere, that study argues that it actually increased the surface temperatures across large regions of the world. And they said that even though those areas had been experiencing cooling, that it increased everything from sea surface temperatures in the tropical Pacific, et cetera, et cetera. They said that, you know, they're still obviously studying it, but they said that this absolutely, I mean, 40, when you're looking at that, 40 trillion gallons of water vapor in the stratosphere. And it was a peer-reviewed research study, and it says it had profound effects on global climate, temperature, precipitation, and they said it's going to actually have effects for the rest of the decade. The Tongan volcano stratospheric water vapor injection. Interesting. And the study, I'll link this for you in an email newsletter, but it's published publicly, and it has everything. It has all the figures. It has everything. It's a very interesting read. But that's not going to be cited or discussed or anything like that. That's not going to be discussed when it's, you know, whenever you're talking about climate. These people did the surveys and did the science before releasing their study. It seems like climate change doesn't even do the, they just release their theories and they expect you to accept it as fact. And if we can get more people to embrace it, then the number of people surely is a substitute for any kind of, you know, rigorous scientific study beforehand. I mean, it causes the volcanic eruptions too. Tonga was different because it was an underwater caldera shot is how it was described, because usually they say large volcanic eruptions can actually cause the climate to cool because sulfur dioxide is what is emitted into the atmosphere. But Tonga was different because it was 146 metric megatons of water that was shot into the stratosphere. And that is what makes it, that's what makes it way different. And they said that you're looking now at a potentially decade long warming as a result of this. Now, you won't hear the administration talk anything about that. They're going to sit here and say it's because you drive a vehicle, because you're not electrified, or you know, a number of other reasons that are beneficial to them, and they're going to use that. But that's the, it's a very interesting read. Like I said, I'm going to put that in your email newsletter and send that out. We got Florida Man on the way, too. And coming up, a couple of other things. Some law and order. The latest on the 7-Eleven beatdown. And, of course, Democrats now are trying to memorialize the death of Mike Brown, which took place today some years ago, saying that if it wasn't for systemic racism, et cetera, he'd still be alive. Yeah, well, you know, we got some corrections to that. So stick with us. We're going to discuss that.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So that Mega Millions, you know, that jackpot, that $1.58 billion prize, apparently it was a Florida ticket holder that won it. The largest total in the lottery's history. The winning numbers were 13, 19, 20, 32, 33 with a gold mega ball of 14. I would have gotten some. My husband says it's a tax on stupidity. And so he's not a big fan of lotto tickets in this house, so we don't ever get to play or touch the thermostat. Anyway, that person now has the option of claiming a single lump sum. That's about $757 million, or take 30 annual payments. I don't know. What would you do, Kame? Would you do a lump sum?
No, one lump sum, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely one lump sum.
So I don't know. I think that's one of the states where they actually don't have to be public, where they don't have to come out and state what their name is. So I hope that they get like their legal stuff set up and all that before they show up and take it. So, ooh, man. But that's a lot of money. All right, so what else do we have here? Because I don't know why this is not showing up. Goodness. I'm so done, dude, with this browser. All right, so a Florida man was arrested after registering a Porsche 930 Turbo. Like, he apparently stole this from a museum. Forgive me, I'm pulling this up. Apologies. It was stolen from a museum, and he tried to register it. Why would you do that? Why would you? I mean, it's a gorgeous car. It's valued at $250,000. It has been recovered, but he was arrested on fraud charges. He registered. It's a 1977 Porsche 911 Turbo. It was stolen from the Sarasota Classic Car Museum. The guy used a VIN number from another vintage 911 out of a California salvage yard to register the car. So they had their burglary alarm tripped off and all this, and officers made contact with an employee. They did, you know, blah, 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 blah. But they ended up locating the vehicle. They got an anonymous tip saying that a 36-year-old was seen with this brown Porsche at an unnamed local warehouse, and they ran it down, and they got, so thankfully it wasn't like damaged. The guy's being held without bond in the Sarasota County Jail. But what a stupid crime. I mean, how dumb are you? I really don't want to bury this. I'm going to go to this one, Florida Cemetery. A Florida cemetery buries the widow with the wrong husband. Not once, but twice. For the second time in the past year, the same deceased widow has been interred with the wrong late husband. Wait, how many late husbands does she have? The Veterans Cemetery located in Bushnell first came under scrutiny last August when her cremains were mistakenly mixed with the wrong veteran's cremains. And then a widow's casket was found in a crypt with the wrong late husband. Okay, so it was two different one. So they said that, there's actually a whole specialty, which I guess, in cemetery and funeral home negligence. They call the mistakes horrendous, the Texas attorney. And they said that these morticians were, by the way, these morticians, they said they were contacted by WFLA. They declined to comment on the mix-ups because, you know, they're working. But how do you do that, though? Like, how? Because if you're mixing someone's cremains together, you ain't getting that back. That's done. They are forever intertwined now, all throughout eternity. I don't know. This is weird. Oh, man. All right. Next, tomorrow, I'll tell you about the woman who makes jewelry out of weird things, including cremains. Right. Yeah. Stick with us. We got more in store.
Florida puts our communities in danger and victimizes innocent Floridians. Accordingly, I am today announcing the suspension of State Attorney Monique Worrell from the 9th Judicial Circuit, effective immediately. I'm appointing Judge Andrew Bain to take over as State Attorney for the 9th Judicial Circuit. Judge Bain is currently a judge in Orlando. He is a native Floridian. He attended University of Miami, where he played football, and he received his law degree from Florida A&M Law School, and I trust that he will be a prosecutor that faithfully enforces the law and will keep the communities of Central Florida
safe. So this is just this afternoon, and that's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who announced the suspension of this state attorney, Monique Worrell. And the left is, well, I'm starting to see literally like these stories populate. They are apoplectic. She's the state attorney suspended for neglect of duty and incompetence. Welcome back to the program. Top of this third hour with you, Dana Lash here. Listen coast to coast. Stream the show. Watch the simulcast. And you can also find us on channel 347 DirecTV. So she's an Orlando state attorney, dereliction of duty on crime. And as I said, the left is livid. She is, a Soros prosecutor. And she's angry over, I think, did I drop you the sound? Because she had a soundbite, her response. But I first heard of her from the Pine Hills killing. Let me bring this story. This is a really sad story. I wanted to bring this story up. This is back in March. This is when I really first started hearing her name. The story is of this 19-year-old who was accused in the Pine Hills shooting spree. He was indicted on murder charges. He fatally shot three, including a 9-year-old child. He was accused of killing a woman, the 9-year-old child, and an Orlando television news reporter, Keith Moses, 19. Only say his name once. Now, according to the affidavit, the warrant affidavit, he went into a home near the area of the where he initially shot and killed someone. He fatally shot the 9-year-old and injured her mother. Then he killed the other two victims, according to deputies. And he had 19 years old. But here's really what is unbelievable about this. Because that 19-year-old should never have been on the street. Ever. This individual, because remember after this, right when this crime first hit headlines, there was a lot of discussion from the left about quote-unquote gun violence. But then, remember, they all got real quiet. And you never really heard much else about the Pine Hills thing. And that is because the suspect was a known gang member with an extensive record. So it couldn't be a discussion about gun safety or quote unquote gun violence, because it was about stupid Soros prosecutors and restorative justice. And I remember DeSantis had eviscerated her at a different presser about that. And so they released a letter to her in March. He told the DA, "I want all of your documentation on why you allowed this killer to stay on the streets." They wanted to know why. He had been arrested so many times. He had multiple firearm possession charges. He said that he had been in November of 21, he was arrested in Orange County. The affidavit noted that he also had a gun on him. He had ski-style mask. He was with some other people. They all had guns and ski-style masks. He was previously arrested for battery, burglary, larceny, robbery with a firearm, possession with the firearm of a firearm, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon without intent to kill, multiple instances of resisting officers, other serious threats. They did not pursue charges against him at that time. That DA allowed that killer to remain on the streets. He had an extensive multi-page criminal history, well-known gang affiliation. And that was when Monique Worrell should have known that she was on notice. And he had already kicked out Andrew Warren from the state attorney post, DeSantis did, because he was saying he was going to ignore a number of different laws, including that of the state-passed law limiting abortion. But Worrell, here's the thing. This is a dangerous, multi-offense felon. They just let him roam the streets to commit crime at will. And so she was trying to defend herself. Her surrogates were saying DeSantis was shameful and racist and all this other stuff. And it was weird because Democrats were insisting on blaming the Pine Hills killings on a lack of gun control, when it wasn't a lack of gun control, because the killer had multiple firearm offenses on his record that Worrell could have taken him off the street for, but she chose not to. So you're making a far leftist prosecutor and her absolute refusal to uphold the law on firearms, you're saying that, oh no, that didn't do it. It's because there aren't any laws. No, the laws that she could have actually charged him on existed. She just chose not to charge him with the violation of those laws. You absolute morons. This is happening in city after city after city after city. And now she's out. And they told her, you clearly have zero respect for rule of law. We're going to find someone who does. And he did. He fired her. He canned this Soros prosecutor. And he announced the decision today. He said, as you heard him, her administration of criminal justice in the Ninth Circuit is clearly fundamentally derelict. It's neglect of duty and competence. I would agree. Let me just tell you some of the stuff. Can I give you her hits? Let me give you her hits. This is August 8th. I had this because this was also, they were trying to make this a gun control thing. This one man, he was arrested in March of this year. Sexual battery on a minor. Molestation. He was a child predator. Worrell let him out on bond. And August 8th, he shot and killed two Orlando police officers. A child molester who should have been in jail, but Worrell let walk the streets, shot and killed two Orlando cops. A 17-year-old who had been arrested in a fatal shooting of a missing pregnant teenager in Orange County. He faced second-degree murder charges. This is November of 22. He was arrested in May of that year for illegal possession of a firearm on school property. That's a felony, because guns are banned on school grounds. That's federal law. And criminal possession of a firearm by a minor. She let him walk. He was released. They did not act on any of the charges. No, they didn't even say a word about the charges until he killed his pregnant girlfriend. There is another. She, in 21, Monique Worrell, refused to prosecute five charges on a guy who had robbed occupants at gunpoint in their home. He had multiple counts of armed burglary, illegal possession of a firearm, false imprisonment. Should have been a 10-year mandatory minimum per charge. And she declined to prosecute. And because she didn't prosecute, he couldn't be declared a prohibited possessor because he wasn't a felon. He wasn't a convicted felon. So he could go out and buy and possess a gun. Oh, yeah. And then he got arrested for murder later because she let him. And then she dropped the premeditated murder charge. I mean, there is so much here. There was a guy, Lathan Yee. He was charged with attempted murder, aggravated battery. He should have faced 25 years in prison. She reduced his prison to attempted manslaughter, no mandatory minimum. He got just a couple of years. Unbelievable. I mean, there are so many of these. There was she lets child pornographers walk free, child molesters walk free, rapists walk free, murderers walk free. Randall Fredericks is a child predator, was arrested for possession of child pornography 3 years ago. Last year, he was charged with 45 counts of child pornography. And he should have actually been 15 years in prison. She watered down everything and just sentenced him to 130 months. She just pursued 130 months. That is who got fired. Now, you tell me how keeping a far-left prosecutor like this, who lets rapists, convicted child molesters, who go on to molest and kill more kids, multiple, you know, offense, you know, murderers, all kinds of, you know, gangbangers, etc. You tell me how that betters the community. The left is going apoplectic. They're livid because DeSantis fired this broad. I think when you're dereliction of duties that bad, you ought to have your ass beat. But that's my two cents. I don't make the rules. He fired her, and they're livid. They're trying to make it about race and all this other stuff because she's a black prosecutor. That's racist. To excuse your coddling of rapists and child molesters and murderers by trying to hide behind your skin color. I mean, that's the racist thing, because you don't want to be held to the same level, the same standard of law as everyone else. That's equality. No, you want special accommodation because suddenly you think that you should get it because that's infuriating. I mean, tell that to all the victims that she helped create because she coddled these offenders. So that's who he fired. He fired that woman. And she called him a weak dictator. Yeah, listen to this. This is her response.
I am your duly elected state attorney for the 9th Judicial Circuit, and nothing done by a weak dictator can change that.
My rage knows no bounds when it comes to this broad. She would rather protect child molesters and murderers and rapists than the people that she was supposed to serve. Good riddance.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Okay, so a U.S. Navy sailor accused of spying for China says he was encouraged to do so by his mom, who thought it would help him land a job with the CCP, prosecutors say. Jin Chao Wei was urged to help the Chinese when he visited his mother in Wisconsin for Christmas. So he reportedly passed the secret naval intelligence to Beijing for more than a year. He and Wen Hengzhao could actually face life behind bars if convicted. I thought treason, the penalty was death. Why? No, I don't want life behind bars. Our tax dollars shouldn't support this. They should be killed. Death penalty. Yes, I'm all for capital punishment for willing individuals who choose to willingly engage in something where they know that that's a possibility. The Costa Rican soccer player, I told you about this. They had a huge funeral for him. He was killed in a crocodile attack after he jumped into a river. That's horrifying. People pay their respects. They flooded the streets for Jesus Alberto Lopez Ortiz, 29 years old. He played for the local soccer club. He was killed Saturday. He jumped from a bridge into a river in Santa Cruz, according to a Costa Rican newspaper, and they cited local police. And then witnesses saw him being dragged underwater by a large crocodile. They had to shoot and kill the croc just to get his remains. And it was still swimming in the river with him in its jaws. And so, oh my gosh, they the team has been working to try to get the clips removed because I didn't see them. They're online. But, oh, tons of people turned out for his funeral. It's just horrifying. Let's see. Nickelback's... Now, okay, I make fun of this. I haven't in a while. But now, is it going too far? Nickelback's hometown removed iconic signs celebrating Alberta's biggest rock group, biggest rock stars. They said that they were dealing with safety issues of fans posing for highway photographs, so that was their real thing. They said that's why, because they said that people were trying to take pictures of them. Since 2004, they've had three highway entrances into Hanna, Alberta, where they said that proud to be the home of Nickelback. And so they took the signs down in May. And the mayor says that, well, it's because, you know, people are stopping on the side of the road and taking pictures with the sign. And he goes, I never thought we'd actually have feedback on that. But they said they also wanted to refurbish the signs, etc. So are they going to put them back? Because they, so far, we don't know. I mean, come on. I think that's going too far if it's because of, I'm not saying it is, but right? Come on. Come on. What have they done to you? Now I cannot believe you guys are getting me, like I'm defending them now. A bear attacked a camper relaxing in a hammock. Kane calls it the human burrito. It's, you gotta be careful. It was in Colorado. It's just a homeowner just chilling in a hammock at a campground. All right, or camper rather. Stick with us. We got more in store.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
Governor, we've already heard today about a few of the Florida-based laws and policies that you would like to extend to the United States. Which policies and laws really stick with the states, and which other policies might actually would you extend to the U.S.?
Well, I think that we'll keep with the Constitution. The powers delegated under the proposed Constitution, James Madison wrote, are few and defined. Those remaining to the states are numerous and indefinite. So, yes, there's things we've done in Florida we're really proud of. They're just not necessarily going to be as applicable. There's other things in Florida that we've done, you know, that would be applicable. But I would say the most thing that's applicable is just the approach to governing. You know, we have a situation where we have the second lowest per capita debt to person ratio in America, second lowest tax per capita in America. We run big budget surpluses, and we've paid down almost a quarter of our outstanding state debt. I vetoed wasteful spending throughout my time as governor. Why can't we take that same fiscally conservative approach to Washington and discipline the Congress and make sure that the Congress stops spending us into oblivion? If they put a bloated bill on your desk, as president, you have every right to veto that bill, send it back to them, and tell them to do better. So that's an approach we would definitely take.
Yeah, that's a great answer. That's a really good answer. To cite from memory, part of Madison's commentary, what is that, Federalist number 45? I was going to say 54. That is a really, I mean, limitations on government, I mean, that's the whole, I like how he addressed that. And it also kind of touched on, too, sort of, I think it kind of disperses or pushes back or I think defends successfully against some of what I think some Republicans have said. Oh, well, there's certain things in Florida that are just too conservative. Like you've heard that from people before. There's certain things in Florida that are just too conservative that wouldn't work elsewhere. Well, yeah, he just addressed that there. I mean, duh. You know, I mean, you have to deal with more constituents when you're dealing nationally as opposed with just a state. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this third hour. I can't wait till he fires more bad prosecutors. Let's just keep it going. Fire more of them. Golly, that was great. That was just, oh my gosh, this one, that DA's record that he fired. I wanted to touch on some more of this law and order stuff because I've seen this now. Like BET put this out. Who is it? Also, Corey Bush from St. Louis. I'm pulling this up. Had tweeted this out because it's, I don't know how many years is it now? Nine. Corey Bush tweeted this quote: "Today is the ninth anniversary of Mike Brown's killing. He would be alive today if the institutions of racism and white supremacy were eradicated. He should be alive today, and we will never forget, and we will continue to fight for justice and accountability. Okay, so here's the thing. First off, I don't call choosing to attack a cop racism or white supremacy. Mike Brown would be alive today if he had chosen not to steal from a convenience store, resulting in the owner calling police, resulting in police stopping him, at which point Brown chose to attack a cop. Brown chose to try to take the cop's gun. And by the way, Eric Holder's own Department of Justice, in not just one forensics report, by the way, two, concluded the same. So this is shameful and a shameful and racist rewrite of facts. Now, Kane and I are from St. Louis. And, you know, in this story, you have to remember, too, the prosecutor of this case was a hardcore Democrat. People forget that. The guy prosecuting, lifelong, hardcore Democrat, who at one point created, back in 2008, a truth squad, Bob McCullough. Remember the truth squad? He, along with another Democrat lawyer, announced that they were going to go after people who were saying things that were untrue about Barack Obama during the 2008 presidential campaign. That's how far left he is. He was the prosecutor in this case. They couldn't do it. I mean, that's the thing. And so because the facts didn't support it. I mean, Mike Brown was approached by the officer, and he was the one, according to witnesses who made up the grand jury. These witnesses, by the way, were from this area. They were from Ferguson. They were members of the community, a jury of one's peers. And they concluded this. The evidence willed out. He had gunpowder residue all over his hands. You don't get that. They said they could tell from forensics he had his finger in the trigger guard. And that there were witnesses, the witness statements, the evidence all supported that he attacked the officer. And is it hard to believe? Because he was on closed circuit television footage attacking the convenience store owner. He assaulted the convenience store owner on camera. The hands up, don't shoot was a damn lie. His hands weren't up. His hands were on the gun. His finger was in the trigger guard. And again, Eric Holder's own DOJ. And that's something that when Darren Wilson, the officer who was attacked, you know, he was called. This convenience store owner called, who is himself a minority, called the police because of this guy stealing from a convenience store and then assaulting the owner on camera. So he called the police. The police responded. The suspect they came across fit the description. He was the one who chose to attack a cop. He was the one that made the decisions that cost him his life. And all these race hustlers and grievance mongers are trying to make this out to be like, oh, well, he was attacked because blah, blah, blah. No, he chose to do it. Don't spare a thought for the minority business owner that he attacked, you damn racists. Don't spare a thought for the black businesses that were burned down from the following riots, you racists. By people, the majority of whom weren't even from Ferguson. Don't talk about how you had actual black community members who were activists who were trying to establish discussions between, and they were working with religious leaders, church leaders, and they were trying to convene a group between the citizens and the police, and then you had all of these out-of-town race hustlers come in, and they literally took it over from them. Don't talk about that, because that happened. Oh, they absolutely came in, and they took it over. They edged them out, because there was a lot of discussion about how these community leaders and these activists who had been in these streets and had been working with police and had been church leaders were coming out. Church leaders were trying to get a handle on the situation. Elders in the community were trying to get a handle on the situation. And these, and I'm not, it was out of town hustle. What was it like? Something like over 95% of arrests. And that was from the police. The police released that.
They
were from out of town. Not even from Missouri. Out of town. And it's people like Cori Bush. I mean, imagine selling out your community for notoriety and lying about something like this. Now, you can address issues between the black community and policing or police without having to make up a lie about Mike Brown. He was nobody's saint. It's unfortunate that he chose to attack a cop and tried to take his gun. That sucks. But that's not racism. That's him being stupid and acting like a criminal. Now, in addition to this, this is all about the erosion of law and order. So, you know the 7-Eleven workers? So, police investigating the 7-Eleven workers who stopped a would-be thief.
Oh, the Sikhs.
Yeah. I mean, apparently they don't know you don't mess. Remember that one video where there was a big old fight and went viral? And it was like all these Sikhs got into a fight and there was like, I mean, it was like the biggest, craziest action film, but it was real life that I've ever seen. Two 7-Eleven workers brandished a knife and two 7-Eleven workers stopped a thief who brandished a knife and that thief got beat. He had already robbed the store twice in a 24-hour span. Stockton, California. And they were going to look at the clerk who beat the crap out of the shoplifter with a stick. They were going to look at him for assault. I say give him a medal. Yep. That man ran up. He ran up like, I mean, a boss with a stick. Wielding that stick. And, I mean, he stopped the guy. So now they are apparently going to, the serial thief who was beaten up, he was arrested. Finally. He's a serial thief. Again, he'd robbed them twice in a 24-hour period. They were done. And the civil rights lawyer is warning people like don't not probe the staff. They didn't attack him. They defended themselves. The guy brandished a knife. How are you going to sit here and be like, no, they attacked him. No, he brandished a knife. You brandish a knife at somebody, they will beat you. Good grief. So that's now. And I mean, gosh, the video of it, too. And he just is there. He's just like brazen, just taking stuff. Brazen. Sweeping it into this trash can. And he, you know why people act so brazen like that? Because there's no accountability. If you're watching the simulcast, you got one of the convenience store owners rushing up with a stick like a boss, man. Like he powered up right there in the middle of that. He went ahead and leveled up. You get a whole new perk, man. You get a whole new skill set. You also have this story of the teenage girl who slugged an Asian woman. Everyone's saying it's, I don't like the term hate crime because all crime is hate. It's all hateful. It's amazing that I think so much of this has to do with bad parenting, obviously. The teenage girl who punched an Asian woman riding a Manhattan subway train with her family last week and attacked a witness. Now police are investigating it as a hate crime. And they're saying that the still-at-large teen was sitting with two other girls. It was a southbound F train before she launched into the assault. And then they pulled the hair of the 51-year-old mother, punched her, were making slurs towards her, et cetera, et cetera. And then they saw the other woman recording her, or they saw another person, passenger, recording her. And then they said that they were attacked, too. How would that play out? How would that play out with you, Kane? I can't. Parents need to, I mean, spare the rod, spoil a child. These kids are spoiled. You're ruining them by not disciplining. Clearly, they have no authority in their lives.
Yeah, it was like what Eric Adams said just the other day.
He's right.
It's a parenting issue.
And you're seeing it more and more. This is what happens when you destroy the family, too, by the way. You're wondering why we have such lawlessness and disrespect? Because you destroyed the thing that provides it, the family unit. When you destroy the family unit, when you destroy that authority in a child's home, my gosh. You know why? I had every opportunity and I had every excuse to be a horrible person and be a mean person. But I had a terrifying mother. Oh my gosh. Terrifying mother. She looked like Sam the Eagle. Looks like Sam the Eagle from the Muppets when she's mad. Her face literally contorts into that of an eagle's. And she, you know how I have RBF? Where do you think I get it from? I mean, just mean. This is just, let me illustrate this for you, because I know we got more to come here. I remember once, because I always wanted to play basketball, right? Like, I played soccer, I did track and field, I did all kinds of stuff. I did classical ballet for 17 years. Could never, ever play basketball. Love basketball. Could never play. I was horrible. Tried my best. Loved it. Worked hard. And after another tryout where I didn't make the team, I came out all dejected, you know. See my mom sitting in there. She didn't park. She just pulled up. She had a cigarette perched on her lip, like pasted, basically. Like, she could talk and it would stick there. I don't know how that works, but it happened. It defied gravity. She's kind of eyeing me. I get in the car and she was like, well, and the guy didn't make it. She's like, yeah, because you suck. You're not good at everything. You can't be good at everything, kid. And then we left. I mean, she was like a female Clint Eastwood. Now she's, you know, she's Nana. And my kids don't know that part of her. They're like, oh, Nana's so nice. No, you guys didn't see her as Clint Eastwood, right? You guys did not see that. Like, when I would say, when I was in high school, me and my friends are going to go get quesadillas at Applebee's and we're going to sit there and do homework. And she literally legit would drive up into the parking lot and peek through the doors to make sure it was a cigarette on her lip, make sure it was me in there. And then she'd leave. I'm like, you cannot get away with this woman. And she was like, I always see. I know everything you do. I mean, we have family members that own pig farms. They eat everything. I'm not going to cross this woman. Come on. So I walked a straight and narrow path. I mean, she made sure of that. That's what these kids need in their lives. We got more to come.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
I have to tell you, I'm looking at some of these fires that are on Maui. If you haven't seen, I think it's Lahaina, the city, I mean, most of the city is destroyed because of these devastating, and that's according to the governor of Hawaii. The aerial video is horrible. That one big banyan tree, the famous one, is gone. The front street in that town is gone. Everything's gone. Boats, everything. Whole island, they're saying, is in jeopardy in Maui. People have fled to the water because it's so dangerous. And some of the, so there's an infrared fire sensing satellite that looks at the map. It's the hub of tourism on the island. It is huge. When you see the, I mean, oh man, it looks, I mean, this looks biblical. It is catastrophic. It's like Armageddon. I mean, our prayers are for everybody there. I mean, it is, oh my gosh, horrible. Coast Guard's there getting people out of the water. And of course, the 70 mile per hour wind gust, according to AccuWeather, camp is not helping. All right, today in stupidity, Kane.
All right, it is our president of these United States. And this is also him whispering, too. Juan, this is cut 8 if you want to play this. Listen to what Biden says here about how important tax credits are.
Let's move on to solar panels because they aren't cheap. Fewer than 5% of American homes have them, and it's still cheaper, easier just to get your energy from the grid. How do you convince Americans that the hard thing to do might be the right thing to do for the environment?
We're giving them tax credits to do it. That's what they're doing. You can afford to do it.
I mean, it's windy. They're literally on the edge of the Grand Canyon. I think he needs cocaine. Give him Hunters. Does it for us tonight. Sign up for the newsletter. Back tomorrow.